if there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
I respect you, and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Chill show tonight. Not much happening, just the continuation of the war, the disruptions of the economy, up and down on the oil prices. First name, last name says, hi, JF. Have you ever heard about the nitroplast? It's a symbiotic bacteria. They're researching to integrate directly into plants for nitrogen fixation. If it works, any thoughts on the ecosystem impact? Yeah, those are huge directions, very important directions of research that can have massive negative impact if it's developed crazily. Because, well, this is a very important thing, nitrogen. So nitrogen is the most common gas in the air. It is what forms the majority of the air. There's less CO2, there's less oxygen on planet Earth than there is a nitrogen in the air that you breathe. So nitrogen is this very, I think it's something like 79% of the air. Don't quote me on it, but something like this. So it's the gas that is omnipresent, and yet life forms interact with it very often as a non-entity. It's basically a filler of the air, and our lungs are not adapted to take it in. The plants are not, the vast majority of the plants are unable to process it. And so it's out there in the air and it's a filler. However, nitrogen is necessary for life, and so there is no way you can live without this nitrogen in some form getting back into solid form. And how nature accomplishes this, from my understanding and my now you're digging into very old stuff that I learned in my baccalaureate studies back in biology, but nitrogen gets back into solid form mostly by bacterial processing. So plants are counting on the fact that there will be nitrogen in the soil, so they don't have to breed it themselves. However, there are a couple of plant species, I believe, that are nitrogen processor. They can transfer the nitrogen from the air into the soil. So one example is the clover, I think. There's a couple of small plants that are nitrogen processor. They literally breathe nitrogen into solid. The same way most plants are a carbon processor. They breathe CO2 into solid form, which is why you can burn a log and get charcoal at the end. So that's because trees are CO2 breather. But you have a couple of small specialized plants that are nitrogen breathers. Now, nitrogen happens to be, if you know a little bit about gardening, happens to be a fertilizer. So it's the reason we fertilize with fertilizer is simply that we supplement the soil with solid nitrogen forms. So an alternative, a natural alternative to fertilizer is to take those plants like clovers and just farm them alongside your plants. So that's a strategy to bring nitrogen into the soil without adding the chemical form of nitrogen. So there's a lot relying on this nitroplast, a nitrogen-fixing organelle. So the nitroplast, I don't know why. I don't know why that is the case, but all breathing operations in life that we know of are all executed by an organelle. That is a miniature cell that lives within your cells. So for example, there's the mitochondria. It breathes oxygen. Somehow we had to integrate another life form into us to breathe oxygen. There's the chloroplast. The chloroplast allows plants to breathe CO2. Now the nitroplast would be the third prong of this wonderful natural kind of fact of life, fractal of life, that an embedded organelle could help process nitrogen. So what you are talking about is probably, I don't know the most recent stuff around this, but it's probably research aimed at leading plants that aren't naturally processing nitrogen to do so. So basically insert either into their genome or into their cells the capacity to produce a nitroplast. The consequences of this are massive. So you would have plants that are more fit to live in an environment where there's a war for nitrogen. Now understand, nature didn't lead to plants having nitroplast very much, except the clover and others. So nature is kind of telling us, you guys are going too fast. Nature is telling us, as far as nature went at the rhythm that it went, it didn't need nitroplast and it didn't need a capacity to breathe nitrogen very much. A couple of plants specialized into this capacity in the ecology, but most plants could do by just counting on the fact that there would be enough of the other plants that they would bring some nitrogen into the soil and they would end up having enough. So that's kind of a message from nature. So when you ask what are the consequences, but it's every time we violate the rules of nature, it's like, why are we doing it in the first place? And then where does it lead to? We're doing it in the first place because in a world in which we have artificially developed plants that are maximized to per season deliver a production, so we have developed plants for a totally different reason than they were developed by nature. By nature, they were standing there for their own survival. We made them into production manufacturers. So corn, everything that the farm, that agriculture cultivates, it's all optimized forms to deliver something to the humans. And as such, we're stealing a lot. We're stealing a lot from what's out there in nature, and we're bringing it into our chains of production, and we're not returning it through composting practice, which is minimal. So we are stealing the nitrogen from everyone. So why are we fascinated around the nitroplast and its possibility? Well, first, it's because you want to save money on fertilizer. Because what is the current cycle of life of agriculture? Well, you have a manufacturer, it's spending enormous amounts of electricity to generate nitrogen chemically, which I don't know exactly how they do, but it's probably some kind of taking it from the air and cementing it into a sodium or into a solid form. So already we are spending a lot of electricity to just replace the nitrogen that we steal from the fields. And we steal it from the fields so that you can have a corn cob on your plate, eat just the grains, and then throw the rest to the trash. So right now, it's a cost of electricity. Now, imagine we were to modify plants to produce their own nitrogen. Now you abolish the cost of electricity. You don't need your chemical fertilizer, or you need much less of it. So now you've developed a special invasive species that is particularly fit to survive the hell nightmare world that you've created for the rest of the ecosystem. So what does it lead to? Well, it leads to domination. It leads to, you know, monocultures being increasingly desert areas for the natural plants. So already a cornfield, if you're another plant, you're not going to get into the cornfield. Maybe some weeds will survive, but you're not going to, first, you're not going to survive if you're a tree there. So a tree will fail because it will get cut within a season by the farmer. And if you're any other plants, you're going to get your sun stolen from you by the growing corn that is so optimized that it grows so much quicker than you. It takes all of the sun. So that's the situation. Those are the consequences of why first we want to have nitroplast and we want to artificially create species that are nitroplast having or that are combined with some symbiotic bacteria in a way that does the job. It's to make the plants more competitive in the non-natural worlds that we have created through agriculture. Generally, there's always something comes back to bite you when you fight nature like this. And certainly what it will lead to is probably invasive species that are much more fit to survive, certainly in the farmer field, but even perhaps beyond. And perhaps these super equipped, genetically modified plants, they might eventually dominate the rest of the ecological niche. Depends if, is it the case that those places where farmers do not change the soil, is it truly an advantage to have nitroplast? That will be the question about whether these plants end up having an impact on the rest of the ecosystem. But they will certainly increase the kind of barrier at which a life form can invade a farmer field. Could this work in animals or humans, he asks, through directed evolution, not gene editing? Well, in principle, you can try to farm a capacity for, I don't know, an animal that would breed nitrogen and would shit it out. You could, in principle. Evolution has no limit. I think, was it the second law of evolution that they called it, or the third law? Evolution can do whatever you want. Yeah, in principle, you could slowly farm. It would be a massive evolutionary step. It would take a long time if you try to do it naturally. Because I don't know even where you start. How do you make it so that one individual is selected to be more likely to head toward the direction of nitrogen fixation? But there is, in principle, there is a solution. AI Tolbal says, is there happiness in your household after Mama JF left? Oh, I'm a very happy man, and we are a very happy family. I do not want life to be any different. I am extremely satisfied about the place I've reached in life. And yes, very happy family based around homeschooling and an extreme degree of self-determination in my household and respect and learning. It is truly my dream life here in Alberta. Alexis says, what kind of diet and vitamins do you recommend for pregnant women? Well, they will tell you classically to continue the prenatal vitamins. So that's one of the concerns is folic acid. So, yeah, I think that the prenatal vitamins are a good idea. And they will tell you on these little bottles, including DHA. Sure, good idea. You know, these fatty components that help the production of the brain. In general, though, I don't think it's all needed. But it's a good check. Like, why not? Why not have all of the vitamins that maybe maybe your particular nutrition lacks one of those. So why not have the whole thing, the prenatal vitamin? That's a start, which you can start before the pregnancy. And then what I don't recommend anything special. Certainly don't be alarmed at these nurses that tell you, oh, you have to cook all of your meat to avoid infection. Infection is extremely rare to come to disrupt pregnancy. And with people with a good basic nutrition, with basic good health, I don't see it happening. There may be justified cases of weak health and weak immune systems where maybe you want to be careful, but don't go into this mode of, I can't eat sushi, I'm pregnant. All of the nurses will tell you this. Don't eat sushi. Some of them will even tell you not to eat turkey breast charcuterie. I am totally against this counseling because it's trying to mess with everyone's life when in fact this counseling should be addressed to about one woman in a million. Like, there's one woman in a million that has serious issues with a bacteria and an immune response, and that woman should not eat sushi. But for most women, absolutely irrelevant. So what I would recommend simply is a fat-based diet. Eat duck, eat chicken with the fat, eat beef with the layers of fat. Fat is a very important component in building the brain, building the nerves, all of the organs. So simply a fat-generous diet, perhaps with milk, or if you prefer meat, any source of fat will do. But really, you don't need to care all that much about your nutrition. The fate of your baby will not be like modified. You would have to have a very, very bad nutrition to mess your baby for life. Slipwave says, I miss David Duke. Any idea what he's up to these days? Yeah, I don't have direct news from him, but yeah, I love the guy. And maybe we can talk to him another day at some point. I don't know what he's up to, but I think I've seen clips and he's going around sometimes in some shows. Deez says, do you think that Israel dragged the U.S. into the war and their intention was to get Iran and the Gulf states to fight each other so that Israel can sit back? Any uncensored Tel Aviv impact footage? Yeah, I do think that, I mean, this is not even just this war. I think this is the history of Israel and the U.S. for the last 40 years. It's always Israel bringing the U.S. into a situation so that then they can create, oh, you know, at some point they tried making the case that Iran had shut down a U.S. drone. And it's, oh, no, you've shut our drones. You've shut American personnel. You have shut, you know, it was a drone with no driver. So it was a U.S. robot. And I was laughing my ass off because they were flying around Iran with this American robot. And of course, Iran just shoots it down. And they tried making a warmongering campaign in the press saying, oh, the U.S. was attacked by Iran. And I was like, bullshit. You flew there to provoke. You flew there with the hope that they would shoot it. And now you want us to cry like an American life was lost. It's like, it's a robot. You sacrificed your own robot. And I think that Israel constantly does this, to be inviting the U.S. at a place where they can be bombarded, at a place where they are definitely sieging a society in Iran. You know, being present in Iraq and Afghanistan, clearly it's like setting up the cannons for a siege of Iran. Mr. Anon says, JF, Richard Spencer said that he expects the Iran war to de-escalate very soon Care to give your prediction for the timeline? Yes, that's as much as I've predicted too at the very beginning of the war. I said Trump is going to do a strike, satisfy the Israelis, or try to satisfy the Israelis. They're not going to be satisfied. And we're going to have maybe 2 weeks total of bombardment. So maybe we're headed toward an end, I would believe, unless something very surprising happens. I would believe we are headed toward the end, and even a declaration by Trump that it is the end in about a week or less. Unless there's some massive response from Iran, which then builds into a desire for Trump to further provoke and further destroy them. I think that if Iran stays relatively calm and throws meaningless missile salvos, I believe that in a week from now, we'll have Trump say, "We won the war! We won!" Now, it depends on what's the end game. If Trump has a secret end game of ground invasion and locking in the next administration into a long-term war, then it might still happen that in a week from now he will declare victory, but there's going to be more build-up, and he's going to come back to it in maybe after the midterms. But for now, I think the local window situation is relatively stable. So I would agree with Richard here. And I'll go on the Richard Spencer show. I have a couple of lined up commitments. So on Monday, I will be on the Gnostic Informant channel. I think it's a big YouTube channel. And we'll talk about the revolutionary phenotype. And then I don't know exactly when, but Richard invited me on his show, but I can't do Thursday. So I'm currently speaking with him to see maybe next week if we can do an appearance, and we'll be able to update on all this war stuff, Iran, etc. GM for the People says the Dukester must be feeling vindicated in recent years, a nice reward late in life after a tough struggle. Absolutely. People like David and me, we are looking at a world that starts to get it, and it's fascinating, and it's the greatest reward for an intellectual to have been right, but not just to have been right, because being right is kind of easy when everyone around you is right too, but being right on something that you get picked on and you get shamed and you get put into the box by society, and they tell you, no, you're insane. Being right about these things is the greatest intellectual reward. And holy shit, were we right. Me, David Duke, Nick Ferentes, Richard Spencer in his own way, I do believe that we are part of a special group of visionaries who are capable of seeing through the bullshit. And capable of seeing through the bullshit at enormous cost. Enormous personal cost. Enormous systems meant to push you and say, no, don't go there. Don't go there. You're not going to have a bank account. And it's like, you have to have a determination for the search for the truth. You have no idea. And even I, to an extent, I cannot picture how do you get there 40 years ago, someone like David Duke. How do you get there in the 70s? I mean, it is, there aren't much more honorable ways to die than to die being right, and in fact to die where at the end of your life you're able to see within your lifetime people veering toward your direction. And sometimes it's almost an honor to not be cited for it. Because I see a lot of the world kind of acts like the early internet didn't exist right now. So they will try to gather some crowds, and some of them will build enormous crowds on Twitter, basically recycling our talking points of 10 years ago. And it's almost an honor how they want to appropriate it, but they don't want to cite you and they don't want to talk to you. They kind of, they're in their delusion. They think that they got it better than you. Sadie Edwards says, unplug your Wi-Fi when you're sleeping, particularly if it's within 10 feet of your bed. The microwaves, same with your phone. Don't use earbuds. Buy the Brokey wired headphones. I'm not alarmed at radio waves. I have accepted them in my life, and I will not shut down my phone or do anything like this, even if it's on the small table beside my bed. I don't know. I think it's safe, but I don't judge you. You know, I think it's a reasonable position to think that it may not be safe and that we don't know enough about it yet. There's certainly a level of radio waves of the, well, I don't know if they're called radio waves, but the Wi-Fi waves. There's certainly a level of them that will give cancer to a mouse. Certainly. But I don't know that we reach this level. I don't know if it's relevant. There's a level of almost everything that will give you cancer. Rian says, salut, Gnostic Informant is big. He has 468 live viewers right now on stream. Well, we'll go see him Monday. This has been scheduled for 7 p.m. Eastern time, and I think he wants to discuss the revolutionary phenotype.
And there's been a rise in anti-Semitism all over the country right now, and it's disgusting and it's horrible. People should know that one of the first things that the Nazis did, and I think it was in 1933, was they burned Magnus Hirschfeld's gender for sexuality. Magnus Hirschfeld was studying...
Is that the first thing they did? Wow. He was high. He was high on the priority list.
Trans people, LGBTQ people, Lily Elby, who the Danish girl, the film Danish Girl was about, she had her first gender-affirming procedure at Magnus Hirschfeld's clinic. The Nazis burned it down. All of this research. And
Wow. I love learning about history. I think we must learn the lessons of history for things not to repeat themselves. Let us all appreciate this treatise of history of what happened before. Sadie Edwards says, so that was in the books they were burning? Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know why they had this specific desire to burn these books. Multiple homemade bombs have been found by the FBI at a Pennsylvania storage unit linked to the Muslim bombers in NYC. This is insane. Democrats need to fund DHS immediately. They are endangering Americans. I don't fund DHS. Okay, so there were these. I guess there is a lot of attention right now, especially given the announcement that they did, that they think Iranian cells are about to be activated by a secret code that was decoded by the American government. They think that there will be terrorist cells that might take action against the U.S. So I guess that in this particular case, I think it's the guy that threw one of the bombs. So they went to his home and they went to a storage unit that he owned, and they found more material to build bombs. So there will be probably a lot of arrests, probably some of them even unjustified. there will be, you know, there will be entrapment possibilities. I'm sure right now there is 10,000 FBI agents on the field posing as artist Muslims on Discord channels and saying, you know, trying to entrap some people into the criminal direction. But I think that they might also uncover actual cases of people building up bombs and weapons for terrorism. John Drake says, no, you have to be hit with a wavelength with enough energy to displace atoms in your DNA. Ultraviolet is strong enough to do this. I don't worry about cancer with lesser wavelengths. Certainly, there's a degree and there's a point, there's a threshold at which it can't. So there's a threshold at which it can't create mutations. And yeah, it's an open question whether, like, because we don't have ways to test. Would the Wi-Fi wave over 60 years of your life, will it kick one of your DNA bases in one of your cells? That we might never know. So that's why I'm respectful of those people who say, no, I'm trying to avoid Wi-Fi. And I'm trying to avoid cell phones held to my ear. I respect this because we don't know and we may never know. I know that we don't know. I know that we don't know because it's always a probability in physics. So you're stuck with the fact that, okay, it's true that ultraviolet will easily modify your DNA. I mean, if you're unprotected, expose just your skin to an ultraviolet ray, I think within minutes, you could guarantee that a certain number of your cells have been affected. Now, that's 1 minute ultraviolet energy. Okay. Well, also, if you were to lower the ultraviolet energy and lower it to just a threshold point, there would be a point at which you will have your DNA modified by the ray, but it might take 10 minutes, and it might take an hour, or it might take a year. So there's always a threshold at which a phenomenon will have enough energy to do it just probabilistically at a lesser degree. So the question is, do the router electromagnetic waves, are they capable of kicking one base of your DNA in one cell over 60 years? Maybe. Matrix Invader says, when will is all finally collapse, JF? When will this? When will the system collapse? Good luck for this. I mean, it has to happen, but it's not going to happen randomly and not tomorrow. So all civilizations, they reach their maturity point and eventually they get abandoned by their exploiters. So I see America falling as the world superpower on an horizon of 300 years from here. So I'm following Philip Fabry's kind of extremely detailed study of these questions. Philip Fabry, History of the Next Century. His view is that basically America is already a falling empire, but robotics and AI are going to give it a last breath. And a breath in Philip Fabry's study of these things, and, you know, he refers to Greece, Rome, Mycenaean society. And in his view, a last breath is about 80 years. So it's an economic cycle where there is actual gains of productivity. And the superpower can still ride over these technological progress and can still outcompete the rest of the world. So because the U.S. will have robotics and AI, and you know, we're talking deep here, we're talking replacement of the whole workforce by general purpose robots, basically, this will give a last breath to American civilization, after which it will be abandoned by the exploiter class and it will be left behind. So prepare for a big economic crash in about 2120. About 2100. Year 2100, it's going to be like the fucking Black Plague. And I'm excited about it. I won't be alive. But I think that one of the tests of nature is the ability for a life form to survive all of the fluff being removed. And I would love to be alive to see it. America without the fluff. Because this fluff, this economic fluff, this lie of modernity, technology, richness, the stock market, investment, high employment rates, this is all fluff. And I would love to see America stripped of it. I want us to be 1,000 times poorer. I would love to see it, because it would free the actual American human to claim his own survival, to recenter around farming practices, to not have this constant drag from the city that hires all of our women to be based around family. It's going to be beautiful. I think people have ingested the technocratic lie that we must constantly care about GDP and investment and employment rate. But that's just in the dysfunctional society you've created. Once we are abandoned and left behind, once the economic forces of this world see no more juice to press out of the American lemon, it's going to be beautiful. There's going to be suffering. There's going to be people who are disarray, who don't know where to get food. So some people might even die. I mean, from just the increased pressure. But generally, it will be a healthier life. And we'll be side by side with the Amish, with the Native American communities, and we'll be drying meats on ropes hanging from the deserted highways. This, yes, Sadi Edward, reject modernity, embrace monkey. Yes, let's go back to monkey. That was a weird meme a year or two ago. Return to monk. It was a bizarre meme that stemmed out of nowhere. How did it arise? Not clear to me yet. Not clear to me. Yeah. I believe that society would be so much more beautiful if everyone had to live with their own survival and center around it. Now, everyone wants to be dependent. It's like 99% of the people in this society, they are looking for dependence. They're exactly the contrary of me. Every step of my life, I have sought more freedom. I have sought exclusion. I have sought a path for myself. I have sought not to be helped, not to be dependent. And I have achieved it successfully. And it's amazing to me. A great chance that I have to live the life I live, with not having to beg for employment, only having to deliver the best material I can to you guys and hope that you guys reward me with some super chats once in a while. An extreme luck. But people, they want dependence. They want the city, especially women. They want the social network, and they want employment. So for them, the most dramatic thing is to be rejected from society. For me, It's the goal. Sadie Edward says, give me a roaring fireplace over a plasma television any day. Absolutely. I still don't have a television in my home. Arne Goat says, yo, Jean-François, if you could live in any time from 0 BC to now, which century would you choose beside the 20th and 21st century? Well, I'm very much a man of our time. So definitely, I love the internet. I feel honored to have seen the appearance of the internet and everything that it has allowed in our society. So this would be high on my choice. But since you say I have to choose beside this century, probably I would love to be maybe a farmer in the 18th century or 17th or 16th century Europe. That's probably the place where I feel I belong. To be a farmer at a time where Europe hasn't yet become fully parasitized, hasn't drifted toward high population centers and a modern economy, but still has a place for peasant life. And perhaps I probably wouldn't, because it wouldn't happen, but perhaps my dream place would be to be a farmer doing math. Perhaps I would like to be an autistic genius farmer who just keeps a little bit of cattle to survive and to care for his family, and then have on the side a passion for mathematics and be in the times of Isaac Newton and trying to contribute something to mathematics. Maybe writing letters to Goldbach, exchanging about my views on prime numbers. If I had to choose from the set that you proposed, that would be it. Now, doing math in those days, that would be painfully more slow than math that I'm doing right now. But it would be, it's the challenge. And it's amazing how we have all of the tools in modern times, but these guys, Euler, Goldbach, Isaac Newton, these guys derive stuff that, if you didn't know about it, if you didn't have the culture, I could give you grok today and it wouldn't cross your mind to get there. It would be painful to even with grok and with programming languages. Like you would have a hard time reinventing derivatives. But these guys derived it pen and paper with feathers to ink it into a written form at the end. It's amazing to me. It's amazing the genius of these guys. When you think about the Hardy Little Wood conjecture, it's like these guys didn't have computers. I mean, or if they had computers, it was rudimentary machines. Calculation machines, I don't know exactly. But they didn't have the ability to compute at high primorials and say, oh yeah, that's going to be the number of Goldbach pairs at 10 to the 10. And yet they came up with the Hardy Little Wood conjecture. And it's like, how the heck did you get there? I stand in front of my MATLAB with full loops to compute everything. And I tend to be fooled about this, and I tend to underestimate or overestimate the bound. But they're like, no, it's going to be about that number in a billion, billion, trillion multiples toward infinity. And it's like, bro, how did you get there? How did you get there from paper and pen? GM for the People says, it could be fun to barbel it, i.e. half World of IDs, AI, etc., half Stone Age, or however you want to LARP it. Well, that's a little bit what RTTL has been proposing with Arval. He's been pushing for a view of Amish with the internet. And that totally represents what I like. I think it represents a very good direction for the world. Amish with the internet. That's how I want to live. Amish with electricity, the internet, but a life of simplicity. Beetle Beat says, what is your opinion on Illustrative DNA? I used their service about 4 years ago, but then they were bought by MyHeritage, and I'm not sure if they are or ever were reliable. I've never heard about this. Illustrative DNA. Thousand Deep Ancestry. Okay, so it's basically a graph that takes your genetic information and just gives you like hunter-gatherers to present what genes come from the Mesolithic, Neolithic, Bronze Age. I don't know the service, so I cannot comment on the quality of it. Be careful when you share your genetic information, because it's like you might regret it. You are giving things to companies that want to store your genetic information. So even if you're sending a live sample, they store it, of course. If you're sending a live sample, they make a test and they store your genome in computer form. And even if you're consulting these side services where you upload your own genome, what do you think they do with your genome? They keep a copy of it. So in all cases, once you share your genome, these companies are going to sell it on the black market. They're going to exchange it between them. And your genome has become effectively a part of the common knowledge for these corporations. And it's not a good idea. I would say be careful. I've been doing 23andMe. And I have some regrets about doing it, simply because what if down the line one of my grandchildren is framed for a crime because they take, oh yeah, we got JF's genome, we got his wife's genome, we got this other person's genome. They could fabricate a whole fake DNA strand that is an exact copy of an expected grandchildren of mine. And they could develop technology to just steal DNA from him, and they could then frame people for false crimes, put false DNA marks on crime scenes. They could, even if my grandchildren were to commit an actual crime, they could catch them because of that. So I think in the end, and it's not that I support crimes or that I want to offer shelter for my grandchildren's future crimes, but it's like it opens up some injustices and some exploitation routes. And we're not even talking about the possibility of bioweapons being developed specifically targeting certain genes, but not others, so that the grandchildren of JF are going to die, but everyone else are going to be fine. I mean, this is kind of eugenic warfare of the worst kind, and it's coming for sure. Marby Dog says, the most amazing invention in mathematics, in my opinion, is pi. Crazy to think we can't calculate the area of a circle without it. Oh yeah, pi is quite insane. And pi is just one example of infinite series, in my view. So infinite series are powerful, they are beautiful, and they capture many powerful facts of mathematics. The fact that certain things can't settle. And that is a very deep thing, a very deep principle. Certain things can settle, certain things cannot. And most things, in fact, cannot. That is one of the truths of mathematics that determines so much. The birth of primes, the incapacity of a function to have a finite number of zeros, the incapacity of a function to remain constant between composites. It's so powerful. It's so deep. The fact that stabilization is a problem for certain things, and if you were to stabilize an integer pi in a Euclidean framework, you would have violated a rule of that very Euclidean framework. Ty Rogerson says, I read about this young guy who killed his grandfather for giving DNA to a company. That's how they caught him. Well. Trump to the Times of Israel. It will be a mutual decision with Netanyahu regarding when the Iran war ends. U.S. president in phone interview clarifies that he will make final call to end operation at the right time. Says he and the PM worked together against the Islamic Republic. We've destroyed a country that would have destroyed Israel. So I think that, of course, the pressure will always be on the side of Israel to extend this war to as long as they can. But eventually, and you've seen this in the past, eventually Trump will start feeling the pressure. He will start feeling the pressure of his own people and saying, okay, you know, now there's nothing productive to be done. Now we're going to put an end to it. Or he's going to start complaining publicly that Netanyahu, you know, it's time to close. It's time to close. So that's probably the events that you'll see in about a week, where Netanyahu will be subtly pushing for extension and forever extension. And Trump will be, oh, well, you know, we got to end things. And eventually, Trump eventually balances back all the times toward wanting to be remembered for good economic performance. So that's where you're going to get a Trump that says, oh no, we declare the end, we declare victory, it's the end. But yeah, the fact that Trump has to coordinate with a foreign entity to decide when a war that America is pursuing can exit is ridiculous. That's the state of slavery in the absence of American sovereignty. I mean, Canada is more sovereign than the U.S. at this point. You guys are mockable. Breck here sends $5. Thank you so much. He says, how far did you get on the moral signal? Also, those map bags are much more convoluted than I originally thought. Seems the numbers just won't crunch. Oh, well, if you're talking about the little file I sent you, I can send you... what do you mean? Do you mean that you are reaching false counts with the program I sent you? Did I send you the program or did I just send you the theoretical form? Because if you want the program for my mat bag, Brack here, which is an exclusive I've delivered to Brack here because I had promised to him many years ago, if you want, I can give you the Python program that accurately computes the math that we talked about. But are you saying they don't crunch in the sense that it's slow? Or are you saying they don't crunch in the sense that it leads to false counts? Because certainly it doesn't lead to false counts if properly done. And I can send you a program that proves this to you. Now, your first question was, where did I get onto the moral signal? Moral signal is not super advanced. White people food will be out before it. Moral signal is maybe at 30% satisfaction to me. I may have about 50% of a draft, but maybe 20% of it is not satisfactory. So I would say overall progress, I'm at 30% progress. That's the situation. But as far as the math bag goes, talk to me in DM and tell me what are your concerns, because I can guarantee to you that I have exact counts on my functions. So they do work. They do work if you do it correctly in code. Rand Paul warns of disastrous midterms for GOP if the Iran war continues. He warned that prolonged U.S. military action against Iran could spell a disaster for the Republicans in the 2026 midterm elections. Absolutely. So it's not the old America. The old America, you would start a war and the vast majority of American society was kind of in a warmongering mood and suddenly supporting you, and you were getting these presidents reelected based on war. Modern America is more divided. It has more of a leftist anti-war base. So it's very hard to survive election on the basis of war. In fact, you get punished. And I think that the Republicans will get punished no matter what. But probably Trump will want to close in on this war as quickly as possible, at least declare a symbolic victory so that they can move on and maybe have some hope of midterm relative success. He says, I mean, more like it's very difficult to find a conclusive proof. Oh, definitely. I mean, those are not trivial issues. And I'm so much deeper than what I gave you. But I'm deeper exploring branches that sometimes don't work. But proving the Goldbach conjecture or the twin prime conjecture is not trivial at all. I've been spending 15 years of my life on this, and it is incredible the fractal of continued open questions as you dig. The depth of the problems are mind-blowing, absolutely mind-blowing. People will never understand unless you really dig deep into it, unless you start asking, all right, I have these primes. Now what? Okay, so now I have these Mobius trees. Now what? Okay, so now I'm inverting the Mobius trees and I'm studying the negative layers separately from the positive layers. Now what? The complexity of it is exponential. And now I'm inverting the Mobius trees. Now I have a race to the third power. And now the Mobius trees is growing. And how do I find patterns within this? How do I find opportunities for cancellation? I've went deep and I've found many. But you always grasp. You grasp for something that is fleeting, for a final proof that's like boom. But it's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. I have the greatest fun exploring those questions, those very, very hard questions. But you're not going to prove the Goldbach or twin prime conjecture by just a little one-page argument. Not going to happen. It would have already been done if that happened. So you're going to prove it by extensive, detailed analysis of things that people have never done before. That's the only path, because so many people have tried. That is it for tonight, boys. Loans to non-banks are threatening a banking crisis. Last week, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corp released the industry data for U.S. banks for 2025. On the surface, the numbers look reassuring, even strong, but beneath the calm headline figures lies a growing risk that investors should not ignore. Okay. Maybe another of these banking crises. I don't know what to think about it. Strenton says, when is JF going on Sam Harris? Don't hold your breath.